they were filling their pockets with rocks, and they were kind of developing their own rock collection, and it just started showing up in the classroom. I finally got a call from a parent, and she said, okay, what's happening with all these rocks? Because my kid just gave up his whole Pokemon collection for a bunch of rocks. And that's when I knew, okay, something's happening here.
This is High Tech High Unboxed. I'm Alec Patton, and that was the voice of Rosemary Beocarles-Rydeen. I interviewed Rosemary on the first day of Deeper Learning via Projects, a class I co-teach with Stacey Lopez as part of the San Diego Teacher Residency, a teacher credentialing program at the High Tech High Graduate School of Education. We wanted to start class by going deep into an exceptional project, and the moment we started talking about it, Stacey and I knew it had to be Rosemary's project, Everybody Needs a Rock. So we asked Rosemary to come in and tell the class about it, and we recorded it all so you can hear it too. The recording starts with Stacey introducing Rosemary, and she does a much better job than I could, so we're gonna get right into it.
I am so thrilled to introduce you all to arguably the best teacher of all time, Rosemary Beocarles-Rydeen. Rosemary has spent more than 20 years working in education, more than half of which were spent teaching kindergarten down at High Tech Elementary, Chula Vista, a school where she was the founding teacher. Walking into Rosemary's classroom is like walking into a different world, one that is filled with wonder and curiosity and play and joy, and where learning is born out of children's questions and items found in nature and rooted in play. The depth of learning that happens in Ms. Rosemary's classroom is what you would hope for children of all ages. And as my oldest child enters kindergarten, I have made it very clear to Rosemary that should she go back into teaching, I would drive to the ends of the earth, or at least to the edge of San Diego County, so that my child could learn from her. You all, it is such an honor to get to spend the next bit of time learning from the incomparable Rosemary Beocarles-Rydeen.
Whoa. Wow, thank you, Stacey.
All right, we are going to be talking about Everybody Needs a Rock. This is a kindergarten project. Rosemary, what comes to mind when you think about this project?
There are many projects in my role now as a professional learning designer that I refer to when talking about elements of project-based learning, but I think the one that consistently comes up in terms of transformative learning for myself and for our community, and when I say community, I'm talking about not just the children, but their families and all of the educators in their care. The word that comes to mind is transformative learning. There was something that really happened in that project experience that felt transformative for everyone. Especially for myself, I feel like it shifted who I was as an educator and a human being and really shifted my design as a teacher.
Why?
Well, I think something that I really focused in on as a kindergarten teacher specifically was I wanted to facilitate an emergent curriculum, meaning that I wanted to be in conversation with my students. Not only like literal conversations, but also have their questions really influence our curriculum and the design of learning experiences in the classroom. And so for this particular project, it really came out of a genuine interest around rocks. I would have to say that it started off with one of my babies, I'll call him B, and he was really kind of struggling with emotional regulation, connecting with other children because of his struggles with emotional regulation, but he started coming in with his own rock collection. And so we would come in during morning meeting and he'd bring in rocks and he'd talk about them. He had an uncle who was teaching him all about rocks. He knew all the names. He knew which ones were heart openers, which one was sandstone, which one was amethyst. And then the next day, another kindergartner, Lucy, brought in her rock collection. And then other kindergartners started bringing in rocks from the kindergarten playground. Like, rocks started just showing up in the classroom. And High Tech High Chula Vista, as you know, is situated on this really beautiful natural space. We have the Otay Valley right behind our building. And so we would go on nature walks, and rocks became kind of this, what we called nature treasures. They were filling their pockets with rocks, and they were kind of developing their own rock collection, and it just started showing up in the classroom. I finally got a call from a parent, and she said, okay, what's happening with all these rocks? Because my kid just gave up his whole Pokemon collection for a bunch of rocks. And that's when I knew, okay, something's happening here. And I should probably tap into this. And I think I was a kid who really liked rocks. I wasn't the type of rock lover that I am now, but I did like rocks. I had a genuine interest in them. But I felt like this was a curiosity that was kind of bubbling in the community that we had to investigate.
Okay, so what time of year is this?
It was second semester. Like, we had already had our first exhibition. They kind of had gone through what a project is. We had established our culture. We had established thinking routines where we were consistently reflecting upon our play, and I had created space for them to pose questions to the community. So we were, I would say, beginning of second semester. So it was kind of like the ripe time to start something new.
Well, in some ways, it was the right time to start something new. What were you planning on doing if the kids didn't have a big shared obsession?
You know, I don't have a recollection, actually, of what I had planned for that particular second semester. I think that's the way in which I have approached projects, or I had been approaching projects, is generally by second semester, I kind of build in that space to have opportunities for students to share out their questions, share it out to the community, for us to share our theories around these questions, and then kind of me as a facilitator build in those opportunities for us to build background knowledge and then revisit those theories.
So what I'm kind of hearing, I'm going to fill in some gaps here. Let me know if I got it right.
Yep.
That you come in the autumn with a kind of sense of like, this is a thing we're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just like ignoring the kids, but you have a sort of structure in mind. And part of your thinking is, we're going to do this more structured thing. During the course of doing that, I'm going to get to know these kids better. And then that's going to create an opportunity for this next thing.
Absolutely. I think as a kindergarten teacher, their first semester in terms of projects, we already kind of have an idea of what we're going to do for the first project because it's their very first project. They have no background knowledge on the elements of project-based learning. They don't know what an exhibition is.
I mean, they don't know what school is.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it is like they're figuring out, oh, I have to show up to this space every single day, and I have to, you know, work alongside with these other people. And so it's a lot of building community and getting used to the idea of coming to this space every single day. Yeah, and so I would say, as a kindergarten teacher, I really wanted to create a space where questions lived and that we could investigate those questions, but it required structure on my part. And so I am a firm believer in play because I really believe that that's how human beings learn best. And I say human beings, obviously children, but also human beings. I think that PBL, for example, is like inherently playful. I think like when we're investigating and we're researching and we're tinkering, we're actually playing. And so I really like to look at this expansive view of play. And so I would always build in time for children to engage in open exploration, but also building in time to what I call kid watching. So while they're engaging in open play, I'm paying attention to what questions are coming up, what theories they're making, like as they're building, or paying attention to what areas of our exploration time are interesting to the children. And then, like I said, I try to be in conversation. So if I notice that children are building high towers, and maybe in the next day I'll put in pictures of like different buildings from around the world to see like what happens next when we add that piece of photography or of architecture. How does that influence their play? And then I build in opportunities to make their thinking visible. And so we would consistently meet to reflect upon open-ended play, but also the play that I would structure around a project topic. And so that would help kind of drive our next activities or like the next questions that we would investigate together.
I'm like getting secondhand stress by imagining like, just by imagining like, okay, it's second semester. We don't really know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then the kids, they're really into rocks. But then I'm kind of like, well, I need some time to like design that. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like I'm going to go, hey, we're going to launch a project tomorrow.
Right.
Because you're accepted. Like, it's one thing I can find like some pictures of tall buildings.
100%.
That's fine. Great. But it's going to be, this is our second semester. It's going to be, there's like a lot more there. So you have this idea. Mm-hmm. And then from when you have that call that these kids are selling off their Pokemon collections for rocks,
yeah.
what's the gap between that and the point that you launched the project? Like just literally number of, I mean, and I'm sure you don't have the exact, but roughly.
I think as like a kindergarten teacher and elementary school teacher, like we have to be planned no matter what. So we're going to have like learning experiences happening. We're going to have our literacy centers that are kind of happening already. So all of that was already happening, even though we may not yet have a project topic that was going to ground all of the content and skills that we're going to learn in the second semester. But I'm not quite sure how many weeks, but I have to say that in terms of launch, something that I struggled with when I was a kindergarten teacher was the actual like designing a launch, because I felt like because I try to facilitate projects that were based on like what was coming up from students, I felt like the project had already launched, like organically. Like it was all, they were already curious. They were already like coming in and looking at the rocks and building their own collections and having conversations around them, going to our community rock count and asking him like, what do you think this rock might be? So I feel like in many ways it already launched, but in terms of like the actual launch that I designed, I would say less than 2 weeks.
Wow. So you have this idea.
Yes.
What did you have to have in place before you committed to this is a project, I'm telling the kids it's happening?
Well, I think for me, and in terms of like being the teacher and really thinking about like what are the content skills and mindsets that I hope children leave with at the end of the project, I think those are like my main things that I wanted to have in place when I was designing the project, because I feel like in terms of launch, like the engagement was already there.
Yeah.
And so I had to really think about, okay, because in elementary school, you're teaching all the subjects. I was trying to think about what is all the literature that we could read connected to rocks, what are the specific science standards and NGSS standards for kindergarten that I could connect to this topic. So I began thinking about it through the variety of disciplines that I teach during my day. And then I just kind of named out what my goals were for each specific discipline. And for me as a project designer, when I'm really excited about the topic, like it really excites me to go out and think about who is also engaging in this work in the community. In terms of what I had to have already planned out to launch, I think like, again, having those goals of like the content and skills, because that really helped me ground what I was going to do the next day with the kids.
Did you have a sense of what the kids were going to make? Did you have a sort of product sense?
Somewhat, because at the time our seventh grade buddies, Kyle Linick was one of them, and he was really into lapidary at the time. And so he was telling me a lot about how they would find rocks, how he was part of this Gem and Mineral Society, and how they would polish them.
This is a teacher, to be clear.
This
is not an actual seventh grade buddy.
No, I'm sorry. This was a middle school buddy who was at High Tech Middle Chula Vista.
He was your buddy.
He was his class and my class were buddies.
Yeah.
And so they would come once a week. Sorry for the non-elementary school teachers here. Buddies, we have like cross-age buddies who would come once a week and we'd engage in either project work or read books together or sometimes just play together. But it was an opportunity for us to build community across the building and also work with another class. So I kind of had an idea that we would probably do something around lapidary. My immediate thought was jewelry.
You're saying lapidary like everyone knows what it means. And one person at this table doesn't exactly know what it means.
So lapidary is kind of like the art of polishing rocks and turning them either into jewelry, or there might be a fancier word for turning them into gemstones.
There's no fancier word than lapidary.
But But again, like, I feel like all of these pieces kind of came together really organically, which is why I say, like, I have some projects where I feel like I was very intentional with the design and the planning, but I feel like the reason why this one felt so transformative for me as a teacher and for the community is because there were all these pieces that kind of magically came together.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like, when in this deconstruction, we'll see that, you know, there was a lot of intentional design that went behind it, but a lot of pieces came together, such as our seventh grade buddy also was into lapidary. So that kind of gave me an idea, like, oh, so maybe we could do some polishing of rocks.
So you've mapped out your learning goals mm-hmm. across multiple subjects, which is no small thing. And you know you're going to polish some rocks.
Yes.
With some seventh graders.
Well, with our kindergartners.
Right, but they were going to polish them with seventh graders.
No, they were not going to polish them. This was actually just in conversation with their teacher.
Right.
Because that was something that he was doing on his own.
Okay, so you have a sense of, we're going to polish rocks. You have a sense of, they're going to learn these things in these multiple subjects. Was there anything else that you wanted to have? I don't want to say nailed down, but at least in place before you committed to it with the kids?
The idea of community partnerships was really important to me, to getting them out into the community and meeting other rock enthusiasts. And so I immediately put my feelers out. I did some online research. I found some gem and mineral societies. The one that actually said that they would present to young children was out in Fallbrook. So we ended up doing some fundraising to pay for a bus because our school doesn't have buses. We rely on parents, but being in Chula Vista and driving to Fallbrook, I just couldn't have my parents drive that far. And so we did some fundraising, got a bus, and we actually went to the Fallbrook Gem and Mineral Society. We had a jeweler as one of our parents in the community. Her name is Sarah, and she is the owner and designer of Chula Mais Jewelry. And so we had her also come in.
So were you just calling people? Were you emailing them? How did you make these connections?
Yeah, I emailed. I mean, there's a Gem and Mineral Society in Balboa Park, but they did not necessarily work with children, which is why, like, I reached out to a bunch, and Fallbrook was the one that was like, we love kids, because generally gem and mineral societies are made up of retired people. and the two people who were kind of like heading this gem and mineral society were retired K-12 teachers, and one of them had taught kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
They were like, yes, bring them. So that ended up being like a really beautiful experience.
All right. Should we get to the launch that was maybe not really a launch?
Yeah. Yes, because they had already launched. And so, like I said, like, I feel like as a project designer, designing launches wasn't like something I did particularly well. I would always say that. I was like, well, it's kind of launched itself. But we wanted to launch and make it explicitly clear that our project was going to be all about rocks. And so I went out and I bought two geodes and I put it inside a bag. And we sat in morning meeting and we were going to have the kids kind of pass around the bag and put their hand in it and not look in it and try to guess what our next unit investigation would be. And of course, because they were all fired up about rocks, it didn't take very long for them to figure out, like, oh, it's hard. Oh, it feels a little bit bumpy. It's probably rocks. I pulled them out. Some kids knew what geodes were. And then I had to explain that geodes kind of looked like kind of normal rocks on the outside. But when you crack them open, we're in for a treat. And so I was really in it. I was like super excited. I bought one of those like fancy Minecraft looking rock picks. And we took out the geode, cracked one, immediately opened. And they're like, oh, ooh, ah, because it's like quartz crystals. And they loved it. They were super excited. So then we take out the other geode. And I take the little Minecraft pick and I'm trying to hit it. It stays like, doesn't open up at all. And I try one more time, you know, with a little bit more force, doesn't open. And I was like, I'm going to try one more time, like, you know, stretching, trying to hit it one more time. it doesn't open up. And finally, one of my little kinder babies, Lionel, says, well, maybe it's not ready to open up. I'm just like, you're absolutely right. Maybe the geode's not quite ready to open up. What do you think we should do? And so one of my students says, well, maybe we need to welcome him and introduce ourselves. And so we take this geode that is not opening up, and we start saying hello. It's like, hi, my name is Miss Rosemary, welcome. And we pass him around the circle. All the kids are introducing themselves to the geode. And I was like, well, does the geode have a name? What do you think? And so, again, passing around, quietly listening to the geode. And someone finally says, like, I think his name is Geode. I was like, well, all right. We've got Mr. Geode here. What else should we do, you know, so that we can make Mr. Geode feel more comfortable opening up? And so, you know, I elicited the ideas from the kids, and they were like, well, maybe we should just, like, show them around the classroom, take them out to recess. And so they did that. You know, we had some kids kind of take Mr. Geode out to recess. And then I had this idea, like, well, maybe each kid can take Mr. Geode home and, like, write about what they did with Mr. Geode to make him feel comfortable, and then snap a picture. And so I thought of this because when I was doing and teaching in kindergarten, we had this bear that was like a mascot called Kinder Bear. And my cooperating teacher at the time would let each kindergarten child take this bear home. And so I thought, okay, why don't we do that with Mr. Geode? And so after school, I kind of put the journal together. I sent home an email about what ended up happening with our second geode. And I put together a list of, like, who the geode would go home with each day. And the parameters were they had to do something to make Mr. Geode feel welcome and special. They had to snap a picture and send it to me, and then with their parent support, write what they did in this journal. And then the next day they would come and share. And believe it or not, Mr. Geode came back. There were a couple instances where it was like, we almost lost Mr. Geode, but we found him. But that ended up kind of, again, organically coming from this, like, wah, wah, kind of launch where it's like, oh, we're going to guess by just, you know, put two rocks in a bag. And then something else special kind of came out of it.
Okay, so that's what was happening outside of class.
Yes.
So what did you tell them was going to happen other than that?
Yeah. In those 2 weeks, let's go back to the planning piece. In those 2 weeks, I decided what was going to be the main takeaways for content skills and mindsets. I also went out and tried to check out any kind of book related to rocks. I also put out an all call in terms of, like, materials. So if anybody had any materials about rocks, because for second grade, for example, that's a second grade science standard. So there were some folks who had materials with rocks in them about the rock cycle. And then I also just bought a bunch of materials around rocks. And so during that time, we did what I would call, like, provocations. And so we would, using some of the materials that I got, set up various stations where children could investigate. So one was, like, gem and mineral identification. So I had a sheet that had, it was sort of kind of like a map that had all these different kinds of gems on them with their names. And then students had an assortment of rocks around them, and they kind of had to match them and figure out what the name was. I also had some agates on a light table, so they engaged in some observational drawings and practicing looking closely. So yeah, I had a variety of stations, and I would start my day just like that. And so they would often walk in, and it was already kind of carefully prepared provocation set up so that children would already feel, like, curious about what was going to happen during the day. So I think, like, all of that planning really happened, I would say, in the 2 weeks, and, like, the gathering of materials. And so I would start off my day in those provocations, and children had a choice of where to go. We did have parameters saying, like, okay, there's only four friends in each station. If there are four friends there, then you have to go choose something else. And then we would kind of, like, build in, like, time to switch so that, you know, there are some kids, if they didn't get the station that they really wanted to get, that they would have an opportunity to go there. And then that's when we would build in time afterwards to reflect on what they noticed in these particular stations. And this is where we would kind of take a question or a theory that a child would pose, and then we'd like build our theory together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Do you remember any of those?
Yeah. We were, and oh, in addition to that, we were also having like science lessons, like what is living, what is non-living. And so we had had some practice around living and non-living things and how, you know, we figured that living things have to eat, they need air, they drink water, they reproduce, meaning they make more of themselves. And one of the questions was, are rocks living? And so we kind of went around, and some kids were saying like, well, no, because you can put it in a jar, it doesn't need air, it doesn't eat anything, it doesn't need water. And then one child said, actually, yes, because it reproduces. And we're like, tell us more, what do you mean? And he said, well, often when you find a rock, it's not by itself, it's like it's amongst other rocks, so it's part of a family, and it does make more of itself. So he already kind of had this idea of like the rock cycle, like there is a way that you can find little rocks amongst bigger rocks. So that would be an example of like an emerging theory that I could then say like, oh, well, let's watch this rock cycle video and then come back to that question, are rocks living or non-living?
What you're describing right now, I would describe as an interest-driven, mm-hmm. inquiry-based unit mm-hmm. of study where mm-hmm. you're learning, the kids are building expertise. Obviously, what makes it into a project mm-hmm. is that they are creating something together mm-hmm. or individually. How does that come in?
Yeah, I think for me, I love the idea of using metaphor, especially in projects, even with young children. And so when I was thinking about the topic of rocks, I was also thinking about who is the rock in our life, right? Like, what does it mean to be a rock for someone else? And so we did a lot of investigation also around like, how can a person be a rock? And with that question within our larger investigation, we started inviting folks in from our community to come in and share examples of a story when they were kind of going through a hard time in their life and how they had someone show up for them and who that person was and how that person served as a rock for them. And so I think like when we start getting into those layers, that it's not just the science content and learning about the math and connecting it to geometry, but also seeing how we can actually learn and transform ourselves and impact the community just from the study of a rock. I think that's, to me, how it transformed into a project.
Yeah. And so what were kids creating?
Yeah. We were inspired by our community partner, Sarah, because she was a jewelry designer, to do something special with our rock. And then I helped them make the connection that it's really interesting that we actually give rocks to people we love as a symbol, right? And so the idea of perhaps making a piece of jewelry for a rock in our life kind of came up. And so that ended up being our product. I had to try to find a way to have students create jewelry so that it was like their hands on it and not so much adult hands. So something that I found in my research is we would have to take a tumbled rock and then do some wire wrapping. It still required a little bit of support, but this was something that kindergartners could do, was wrap wire around rocks and then
Were you tumbling your own rocks?
We were tumbling our own All rocks. Right. We were tumbling our own rocks.
So was everyone choosing like, this is it, this is my rock?
Yes.
So a kid has their rock, they put it in the tumbler, which takes like days, right? Like,
for it to look as shiny as we wanted, it was supposed to like be a lot longer. So I looked up some different ways that we could shine rocks, And one way was to take like nail polish. This was very controversial. We had to have a talk about it. There were some kids that are like, this doesn't feel right. I don't think we should be painting our rocks with nail polish so that they're shiny. And so yeah, we had to have some conversations around like, okay, this is like a gift. We're not trying to sell it. We're not saying that it's, you know, being shined for 3 months and that's why it looks, because, you know, exhibition was going to be.
Is what we're talking about, though. Like a properly shined rock.
Properly shined rock was in the tumbler that we had, because it was like a kid tumbler. It wasn't like a professional tumbler. It would take months. And we kind of didn't have that amount of time because exhibition was like in a few weeks. So we're like, you know, we could use some nail polish and it will kind of do the same thing. And so we got them all on board. There was one that was still kind of holding out. But yeah, so we chose a rock because we would engage in nature walks behind our school, and they were collecting rocks on these nature walks. And we also took the time to identify who would be the rock in our life that we would like to celebrate. And so they found their special rock. We put in the tumbler. They identified who their rock would be. And then we practiced, in terms of writing letters to our rock, explaining why they are the rock in their life. And so for our exhibition, we shared our letters. We created a book of letters to our rocks, presenting our rocks, like our tumbled necklaces. And I also collaborated with our performing arts teacher at the time, and we put on a rock show. So we're really playing around with the word rock for our rocks.
So how much time did the kids spend on making their jewelry?
Oh, from choosing the rocks, putting it in the tumbler, which we had to do for several days, so there was a lot of waiting. And that tumbler actually runs 24 hours. Goodness, I would say a couple weeks, because we also engaged in like rapping practice just for like their fine motor skills, so that when they finally got to rapping their rock for the rock in their life, they had practice. This wouldn't be the first time that they practiced rapping something.
Now, did critique come into this?
Yeah, I would say the critique came more into their writing samples versus the jewelry making, just because it just felt like a much more natural space to have critique, where it would just be more, it was a space more ripe for critique, whereas like they already had their rock and there was only so many different ways that they could wrap it.
Yeah.
But yes, critique went into, because they had to have an illustration that went along with their writing. And it was in letter format, which actually is a second grade standard. So there was a lot of really pushing the kids in terms of their literacy. And so some kids got like extra support, but for the kids who were ready, they were actually writing the letters to their rocks, just explaining who they were. And so there was critique around making sure that the illustrations matched the words. There was critique around like looking at models, right? What is it that a friendly letter needs? It needs a date, needs a greeting. It has to have a clear body. Is their writing easy to read? Is there adequate spacing so that we can figure out the message of what they're trying to say? Does it have a closing and their signature, and is the format correct? So there was definitely critique around there.
Yeah. And what did you decide to do for the exhibition?
For the exhibition, we really wanted to flip the script and have the kids really like be the teachers and have learning centers where they were teaching our visitors about all the different pieces of like the science behind rocks. For example, we learned about how granite is a rock that is like prevalent here in San Diego County, and how it's made up of quartz and mica and feldspar. And so yeah, we had different stations examining granite. We learned about the different hardness that you can find in rocks. And so one of the minerals that you can find, again, prevalent here in San Diego County, is quartz, and how you can figure out if a rock is quartz or not is whether it can scratch glass. And so we had a center where a couple of kids were like, is this quartz or not quartz? And how do you know? And have them kind of go through that process. There was also observational drawing. There was like a wire wrapping station where they talked about like the ways in which they created their jewelry. And then of course there was the area that showcased all of their letters and where they shared the idea of people being rocks as well.
How do you prepare kindergartners for that?
I think the biggest piece for preparing kindergarten, which is a good practice, I think K-12, is that the pieces of the exhibition don't feel new. It's not like I'm adding this piece that they have to learn in order to get this exhibition just right. For example, it was all pieces that they have learned throughout the project. So for example, how do we know if this rock is quartz or if it's sandstone? Well, we know because it has a hardness scale of 7, so it's going to scratch a piece of glass. And we had a glass, like this jar, that we would practice scratching our rocks on. So something like that where there were practices and experiences that they could recreate for the visitors, I think was a key piece. We also take time to practice. You know, I think ideally, something that we learned from our very first director, Anne Worrell, was that, you know, you ideally want to be done with the project like at least a week before exhibition, so you can spend that time really practicing for exhibition and you're setting the kids up for success. And so to prepare our kindergartners, we also made sure that we prepared our adults. And so we did that by having a set of questions that were already set up at their stations that visitors, when they would come to that station, could rely on some of these prompts. And we had practiced these prompts beforehand with students. So it's not just like open questions for each child, but there are very specific questions that the adults can ask the students and then the students feel prepared to answer them.
And what happened to Mr. Geode?
We decided, okay, we're going to try to open up Mr. Geode again at the exhibition. And I was worried because he showed up, he came back, he went to all 20 plus homes and came back. But I was like, oh no, what if he doesn't open up? Because we're going to have a big audience. And so I had invited Gabe Ogilvy, who was the director of our after school program at the time, who was like 2 feet taller than me, because I thought it would just be hilarious to have him crack open the geode with our rock pick. And we kind of saved that piece for last. We were like, okay, we talked about how we had Mr. Geode at everyone's home. And so that's kind of how we, second to last, closed out our exhibition, was that Mr. Gabe came in, put Mr. Geode inside of a sock so that in case he would open up, it wouldn't like splatter on everyone. Just one hit, and we were all like, is he gonna open? And he pulled him out, and Mr. Geode had opened up. And all the kids could identify that Mr. Geode was a druzy quartz. And then we closed with our rock show.
What happened in the rock show?
So I collaborated with LaTanya Lockett, who is a brilliant arts integration educator, and she's also a singer, so a local singer, so she's very much connected to the art community. And she had brought one of her friends in to play acoustic guitar. And she had my kids for exploratory for performing arts. And so they had been practicing Sweet Child of Mine. And so they closed out with Sweet Child of Mine with a person playing acoustic guitar. And it was, all the parents did not, there was no dry eye in that room.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
This now brings it over to you all. Come on up and ask your question.
Hi, Rosemary. I'm Taylor. I had a question similar to Alex's sentiment about just hearing your explanation and then feeling so stressed about like last minute planning. It seems to me from what I heard that you typically have like your first semester project planned out. My question to you is, I love the idea of asking questions and formulating, whether it be a first semester project or a second semester project, based around the questions and the curiosity that shows up in the classroom. Do you always plan linear in that scenario? Do you ever backwards plan?
I do. In fact, I encourage backwards planning.
Yeah.
I think I was already thinking about what the exhibition might look like, what the product might look like, because I had already, our seventh grade buddy who mm-hmm. was engaging in lapidary. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do. I don't necessarily plan linear all the time. I know it's not a comfortable space mm-hmm. for a lot of teachers to be in, where it's like, I don't know what the next project's going to be. We'll mm-hmm. see what it's about.
Yeah.
It is a space, I think, where I was in my career, mm-hmm. where I felt very comfortable to be mm-hmm. engaging in that dance. But yes, I do backwards planning. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Because then once you have kind of like your dream exhibition in mind, mm-hmm. those products in mind, then you like take the steps towards it.
Yeah. Typically, I plan backwards as well, but I do like the idea of like, starting with the question, going to like the last product that's going to happen, and then building from there. So it does sound, even though it seems like a lot of this is on the spot, there is still some type of a structure, which is very comforting.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, this is really not so rogue.
No, I think like when you first hear like, oh, like we're going to design based on their questions, it feels very open, but there are actually like structures that are put in place. Mm-hmm. And I am also intentionally designing with the end in mind. So I'm already thinking about, okay, this could be a product. This could be mm-hmm. like, but also open to the possibility that like maybe in a community outside experience or with a community partner, mm-hmm. another product comes out that feels more like authentic mm-hmm. to our experience, and being okay to shifting to that.
Yeah. I like the flexibility.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll just add, I think like with anything like this, students will express interests and different interests. And part of the skill of teaching is building the judgment of, oh, you know what? We have this opportunity and this interest. Let's actually take this project in another direction. Or saying, that's all really cool, but we're going to stick to the course that we have here. That's a set of muscles that you develop as you go as a teacher. And I also, you can do a lot, like you can put a lot of structures in place about, we know, you know, we're going to exhibit here. We know that we're all making comic books. And then there's a lot of space within that for a student's interest, for a student to go, oh, actually, I'm really excited about this particular thing. And they take it in their own direction. So it's not an either or. It's not either mm-hmm. we are just a playground of wonders and nothing set in place, mm-hmm. or everybody's in lockstep doing the same thing. You can create structures and give kids a lot of freedom within those structures. I think we should probably do one more. Is that?
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I know you, Rosemary, but I'm Blair for everyone on the pod. I was so excited to hear your project story today, because I'm in the midst of a geology rock project right now with my fourth grade friends. And I know more about rocks than I've ever thought I would know. And I have my own rock box. You know, it says Miss Blair. And we trade rock box. Like, you know, we have rock box time. It's so cool to see that the kindergartners loved it too. And this was a project that they've been doing a lot for the past mm-hmm. 6 years. And yet, you know, my CT says every other year, you know, some kids will be into it, some won't. This year, the kids are loving it. And it's really cool to see. My question was, how did you incorporate math into mm-hmm. your project?
For math, I think the one that felt like it made the most sense was through geometry, because we were looking specifically at like crystal structures. And so I felt like when we looked at different crystal, like looking at like a quartz, for example, and zoomed in, you could see that it's made up of different three-dimensional shapes. And so I had gone online and found all these different like crystalline structures. And so I had that as like a math station, but it kind of served as this entry point into a larger geometry unit. So we reviewed two-dimensional shapes, we reviewed three-dimensional shapes, and then developed the vocabulary around that. So learning about faces and vertices and edges, angles and sides, and also where, in addition to rocks, we can find these shapes in real life. I think for this particular project, the crystalline structures felt like it was kind of like an entry point into geometry that felt really engaging, and we got a chance to see, like, where do we actually see these shapes in real life? And if you zoom in, you can see them in nature.
Yeah.
So that's where.
That's really cool. I love that. I mean, especially because we just started geometry and vertices, and so it kind of fits right in. So I'm going to take that into our project. So thank you.
Awesome.
All right. Rosemary, thank you so much. Can we get a big round of applause from the crowd?
Thanks for having me.
High Tech High Unboxed is hosted and edited by me, Alec Patton. Our theme music is by Brother Herschel. Huge thanks to Rosemary Bio, Carlos Rydeen, Stacy Lopez, and all the students in the San Diego Teacher Residency. Rosemary is now a professional learning designer on the High Tech High Graduate School of Education's professional learning team. Stacy is director of the New School Creation Fellowship, part of the Center for Love and Justice, also at the High Tech High Graduate School of Education. We've included links where you can find out more about both of those, as well as the San Diego Teacher Residency, in the show notes. And there's a video about the Everybody Needs a Rock project. Thanks for listening.